Radioactive Sports in the Afternoon on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket.
We don't learn how to stop the run. We don't learn how to quit doing dumb things, jumping off sides on third down, having penalties, learn how to pass protect. It doesn't matter who we play or when we play.
Damn it, Maverick!
Welcome back. Radioactive Sports superstar Mike Morris, Ben Holson.
I'm not worried.
Ben is apparently not worried about any of this.
I would be worried. I am worried.
Quite a little way of quantifying a season. They have found apparently an aggressive and or high risk index to be able to rate coaches on how willing they are to go for it or to try things that otherwise are not exactly the way to go. It's aggressive and it's the fourth and ones. Going for it to keep a drive from stalling and inevitably to win a game by coming back.
I would have to say Mike Zimmer is probably on the top of that list after last year. He's pretty aggressive. He went for it a decent amount. Is he not on top of the list?
Actually, is the fourth. He's the last.
What?
He's the last in the NFC.
Least aggressive?
The least aggressive.
What?
In fact, it says the eyeball test of Mike Zimmer's first season with the Vikings suggested that the neophyte head coach was a little bit on the conservative side. As it turns out, the numbers support that. And I think this is crazy.
Did you guys miss me?
No. Our friends at Football Outsiders has released their annual aggressiveness index is what they call it. To rank how aggressive coaches were in certain game management situations, Zimmer ranked 20th of 32. But he was last in the NFC. According to the chart, Zimmer went for it on 7 in the team's 102 applicable situations. Let me get that out.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah, apparently so. More specifically, he went for it on 4th and 1 in 4 of 13 situations and 4th and 2 in 2 of 9. So in 4th and 2, 2 of 9. And, I mean, when you look at the guys that are on top, They're the coaches that are leading in wins and the kinds of teams that make it further. So it's
but look at the roster that he had to play
it.
With.
That's
there was
the
no
bottom
Adrian
line.
Peterson.
That's
and he had a rookie quarterback
and
no offensive line.
No Adrian Peterson, injured, just riddled with injuries. New quarterback doesn't understand the offense. Norv Turner's offense, and I mean, of course he's going to try and keep things under control. Of course he's going to try and keep Bridgewater, reined in. He's not going to go for – it's risky enough to take the field with those guys anyway because they're so new. And he was new to those guys. It was a brand-new team for him, too.
I would say he was pretty aggressive based on everything you just said. With all the things stacked against him, he was still pretty aggressive. And I have a feeling going into his second season, he'll be even more aggressive. He's an aggressive coach.
He is very much
so. He's a smash-mouth coach on both sides of the ball. And he wants to just crush the opponent.
And that's the part of him that I know that when you think Mike Zimmer, you think aggressive, right? And it's because of the way they play defense. And there's no stat here for defense. It's only offense. That doesn't make sense either because half of his decisions also take place on the defensive side of the ball. Where he was, I think, very good.
He was calling all the defensive plays.
How do you have just an aggressive index for a first-year coach that covers apparently his entire coaching body of work from the 16 games they played last year? How do you do that and say just offense? Well, but there's special teams in that too. It's a high risk for Zendejo to get a pass from the personal protector or a direct snap from the long snapper and run down the sidelines and make a big play. That's a special team play. Why are we just talking offense here?
Because offense is the sexy part of football.
Of course.
That's the one that scores points. That's
but
the one that gets
aggressive index. I mean, there are a lot of things you can do in football. And a head coach should be weighed in on all of that.
Especially with the amount of blitzing he was doing last year and the aggressiveness leaving man-to-man coverage outside in the corners.
And what do they say about blitzing?
Aggressive.
Aggressive. And you can either win with the blitz or you lose with the blitz, right? Yeah. I mean, it's risky. It's high risk. So, I mean, I don't, it's a bad index, but what kind of season is he going to have? I say if his players are healthy, if he's got a good draft to work with, Adrian Peterson comes back, him in his second year, Norv Turner, That's basically Zimmer's defense, by the way. Edwards does a nice job, though. I think they do it. I think they have a nice season in front of them right now.
Would you rather have Adrian Peterson all disgruntled and ho-hum and obviously all the things in the offseason, or would you rather have another first-round draft pick to maybe go grab a Todd Gurley or a Melvin Gordon?
Oh, man. Well, I mean, I'd rather have one of those new kids. I really do. I mean, that's my feeling.
Just because of the baggage, or you don't think Adrian Peterson can
go out there and
give you 1,500 yards, double-digit touchdowns?
You can find a way to land one of those young guys and get another 7 or 8 years out of a good running back. I mean, Adrian, that's Adrian Peterson. I mean, what are you going to say? I mean, that's who would say no to a guy like that? He's a monster. But I don't know how many years he can keep going like this.
Would you say there are more question marks this year going into the NFL season than there were last year? I mean, I know we're talking about this stuff before the draft. But last year, Matt Castle, the quarterback, the offensive line looked good. Kyle Rudolph, big contract, tight end.
Mm-hmm.
Greg Jennings, Cordarrelle Patterson coming back in his second year. Everything seemed fantastic there. Defense coming along. They signed Linval Joseph, Captain Munnerlin. It looked good. Coming in with Mike Zimmer, turning things around on defense. I don't know. To me, it seems like right now, and obviously a lot of things will be answered in the draft, but there's still so many holes.
Yeah, there will be. I think almost any year you have some player changeover and change in with draft choices. You have some veteran free agents that take off and leave. Last year it was Jared Allen to Chicago. Everson Griffin gets the big contract to step up and play 12 sacks, 13 sacks, whatever it was. I mean, that turned out to be a good one, but you have those kind of decisions to make all the time, every year. My biggest concern this year, if I'm looking at three things that I want to see, I mean, the three biggest priorities for me is, how do we fill in at left guard? I want to see what kind of football player Kyle Rudolph is. If he can just stay healthy, I know we've got a good tight end, if he can just stay healthy. Third one is the big unknown, the X factor, Cordarrelle Patterson. It's nice to get Mike Wallace. It's nice to all these other things that are happening around us. You know, the Barr is a great player. We know that. Mm-hmm. Greenway's back. So a lot of good things happened over the offseason. But tell me what's going to happen with the X factor. That guy could be out of this world if they could tap into him.
Yeah.
That's another receiver we don't even talk about.
Mick from West St. Paul, you're on 105 The Ticket.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. There's something I hear a lot from you guys and other, you know, shows, wherever, about Adrian and being on the team with a bad attitude. And personally, from what you've shown so far, you know, he's all day, regardless of who he plays for. So if he ends up with the Vikings, I don't think you're going to have a disgruntled guy causing problems in the locker room and not giving an effort on the field. You're going to get Peterson 100%. And if he plays for somebody else, they're going to get the same thing. So I think when this all blows over, whether he's with us or not, you know, it's going to be Adrian Peterson, don't you think?
Well, Mick, I agree with the on-the-field issue, but off-the-field in the locker room might be a little bit shady, and they're going to have to, whether it be the players needing an apology or what he said about the organization or coming back with the fans, I mean, there's just going to be a dark cloud over it. But I don't disagree with you, man. I think if he's out on the field, he's going to give everything he has. He's Adrian Peterson, and if he doesn't give everything he has, he's only going to be embarrassing himself. But there are all that other stuff that could go in and cloud the situation.
I just don't think once the first little bit of time goes by, whether it's a week, once he hits practice, he's always been a leader out there. I don't think he's going to be any different, and you know, regardless of what team he ends up on.
I agree. I totally agree. When he's out there, there's no one in the world that tries harder or is more competitive than Adrian Peterson. But not as much a problem in the locker room for him with teammates, although I think he should say something to his teammates. He has trouble with people upstairs and the way they supported him or did not support him during this.
So to bring that into the locker room, though, and his attitude might be, I don't know, a little shit. If he's going to miss mandatory mini camps and show up late or not show up for training camp. I mean, that all of that stuff, the media is going to be talking about that to every player. He's going to be a distraction. Well, and that's what I'm talking about, the distraction that he could possibly be.
Well, he meets with Goodell apparently tomorrow sometime. So they will talk the talk. We will talk with Brandon Warren from Cold Omaha, one of the writers here at 105 The Ticket. We're going to talk a little bit about the Twins veterans and what that brings to the team. Why don't they bring up those young kids? We've been talking about that for a long time. We will talk about that with Brandon Warren next.
That's right, Cold Omaha. It's either a run or a pass play. It's got to be one of the two. Kind of an audible system, though. Anytime, I mean, we change the riders that come in here for Cold Omaha all the time. Today we've got Brandon Warren. Are you not worried?
I'm not worried about Brandon Warren, no.
Let's ask Brandon if he's worried.
I'm not worried.
He's not, so we should go ahead.
Nobody's worried.
Go ahead and just keep going here.
A couple things that I do say, though, are...
Damn it, Maverick!
It's Maverick's the son
of
a
gun. You say that a lot.
A lot of the time I do. A lot of the time I ask Ghost Rider for permission to do a flyby. And it doesn't work out very well.
Wow. I had no idea.
And then I make that a little laugh.
Well, we're gonna break down the Twins and understand what some of the breakdowns are. Literally, this club has been broke down a little bit. And Santana sat down a little bit, like for 80 games or so. That's a shakedown. Then for the rest of the team, how are we going to man up? Brandon Warren to explain how.
Good evening, gentlemen. I'm a little worried about you guys, I think, if I'm worried.
Oh, we got issues.
Yeah, I definitely would be worried about us if I was somebody outside looking in as well.
Why don't you just not worry about it?
No, I'm not worried about us.
Okay.
If I was somebody looking in or listening, I would definitely be worried. But
yeah,
I feel like I've got it under control, but
I don't think I do. In fact, I just peed myself.
Fake it till you make it, brother.
Yeah, well, you know, what's going to happen with this club? I mean, all this shakedown, all these last second changes right before the opener.
90 losses again, here we come.
Yeah, I wrote about that today, just a little brief thing, and I think it's going to get worse before it gets better, and I don't think fans want to hear that because they don't have the kids on the roster to lean on, they don't have an all-star game to lean on, and you don't want it to become the Timberwolves situation where the ticket reps are calling people, begging you to come out to the stadium, and that's maybe the next logical step if they can't sell the place out. Now, they'll sell out next week for the opening series, and at least the first game, yeah, but I think it could get uglier before it gets better.
Here's the interesting part, too. At the end of the game, Torrey Hunter called out in strikes, check swing. Didn't look like he went through by any means. He was upset because Joe West, the home umpire, didn't ask the first base umpire if he went through, and he was upset. Why didn't Paul Molitor come out and help him argue that little ditty?
Yeah, I was wondering about that, too. I mean, Molitor obviously looked, you know, upset, but it wasn't anything like, go protect your player, like a managerial instinct, you know, to get in between him so he's not tossed or, you know, not in danger of maybe missing the next game. I don't know what the rules are. If you can toss somebody for the next game or anything, I don't think you can do that. But it was a little strange to see him not come out and protect his player in one way or the other. I mean, obviously, Torrey Hunter, a veteran, and Joe West, a veteran umpire, you know, those two tangling made for good TV. But at the same time, you know, it wasn't that call that defeated the Twins. David Price defeated the Twins. But to have Kenny Vargas with the bases loaded representing the tying run would have been a nice situation, too, especially against Joe Nathan.
Well, it was been so rocky.
Maybe that would have been kind of sweet, I think, if Paul Molitor would have charged the mound a little bit in the first game as manager.
Throw punches. Remember Don Zimmer? Pedro Martinez?
He just flipped him on his rear end.
That's disappointing, though, but how long, I mean, how is Paul Molitor, who's a Hall of Famer, by the way, played baseball for a really long time, great baseball player, former Twin, grew up in St. Paul, all of these things. What's the learning curve, and how long is it going to take for him to learn everything he needs to know? Because he managed his first regular season game today, and at times it looked like, why aren't you doing some things here or there, and especially that last call and the last play? Get in there.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully the learning curve isn't too long because it's the top level. You got to be ready when the bell rings.
Do you think he's ready?
Yeah. I mean, I think he's been around the game enough in so many different capacities, whether it was as a player or as a roving instructor, or, you know, he was a guy when I covered the team in 2013 that was there quite frequently as a, you know, a non-uniform personnel guy that would be in the clubhouse. And in fact, the Latin players kind of flocked him. So that was kind of cool to see, you know, not a discernible connection, but those guys, for whatever reason, resonated with him. Maybe a big reason why he got the job. But yeah, you hope that his managerial instincts, to what extent those actually matter, are already there and developed, and that it's not going to take him too long to figure out, you know, exactly where he needs to be and when, especially with a situation that came up like today where he could have protected Torrey Hunter if he felt the need to. Maybe he felt Hunter could handle the argument himself, and maybe that's accurate.
I mean, I as a veteran ball player, he must have just thought, look, it's 0-4, let's get out of here. 4-0, let's get the hell out of here. That last out, let's go home.
But seriously, you live to play another day. Torrey Hunter has another another pitch or two to face. Maybe he gets on base. And
yeah,
like Brandon was saying,
that's how you have to approach it. When you're a skipper, you have to approach it that way, too.
It's do or die.
You have to go out there. It would have made for a good scene. His first game
And he's already out on the mound spitting on something.
Yeah, it would have been great. We're talking to Brandon Warren, part of our Cold Omaha writing team at 105theticket.com. His new article, Low Ceiling Veteran Characterize, Veterans Characterize These Twins. And so tell me what you really, I mean, I read the article, but people that haven't read the article are going right now. You talk about Jordan Schaefer and Eduardo Nunez and then Tommy Malone and Mike Pelfrey and some of these other guys, the guys that are in the bullpen, Blaine Boyer, Tim Stauffer, Brian Dunsing, when they could have brought up some of these younger guys. Instead, they went with these veterans that don't really have much growth to them. What you see is maybe cultivating what you have in the farm system.
Yeah, basically the breakdown is that each of these guys making the team on an individual basis is defensible from a personnel standpoint. But when you pull back and you look at the 25-man roster as a whole, and you have six, seven, eight guys who are in their, you know, early to mid-30s, have tapped out their ceiling, and it may not have a high ceiling to begin with, you start wondering, well, why did you drop $100 million on Ricky Nolasco and Irvin Santana in the last two off seasons if you were going to go into a new season with the potential of having Jordan Schaefer and Shane Robinson be your options in center field? Like, what's the thought process there? Like, why would you then not go out and sign somebody else to play center field and make Aaron Hicks steal the job from someone that's clearly more talented than him?
Fat chance.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, somebody who's clearly more talented. I mean, Aaron Hicks, from a physical talent standpoint, is much better than Jordan Schaefer or Shane Robinson. But if from a putting-it-together standpoint, you can make that argument. So it's not that it's not defensible that Tim Stauffer made the roster or Blaine Boyer. But when you have five, six, seven, eight of those guys and you're already the second oldest team in the American League Central, you already aren't that interesting from a quality standpoint. Now nobody's going to want to see you from a viewability standpoint.
But don't you think they're trying to play it safe because they do have these pitchers? Obviously, Irvin Santana with the PED suspension, 80 games. That came down on Friday. He won't be eligible to play until July 4th. But the Twins thinking, okay, we have some of these pitchers now. We spent a lot of money on pitching. We have Torii Hunter. We brought him in for veteran leadership. We're just going to play it safe on some of these other places while we wait for our younger guys to be good enough to be called up from the, you know, double or triple A, wherever they are. Just play it safe. We'll kind of ride it out here. But then at the same time, the devil's advocate in me says, not going to win the Central anyway this year, so why not just let it all hang out and play the young guys and see what happens?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically where do you put the tightrope above the safety net, and the Twins have chosen to put them basically right next to each other instead of, you know, walk a tightrope and have Michael Tonkin in your bullpen, who's been a fine pitcher over the 30-some-odd appearances that he's made over the past couple seasons, and has obviously got something that other guys don't have, a nice fastball in the mid to upper 90s. And Ryan Pressly, you could argue, should have made the team. Caleb Thielbar should have made. I mean, he threw the last two seasons, some pretty big innings. A lefty that can get lefties out. Obviously, again, he's not an all-star. He's not going to make this team great. But at least he's younger, you know. And the other thing is if you skip that trifecta of guys, and then you bring up the kids, the real kids, the Reeds and the Birdies, and you skip over those guys, then you have no trade value in the guys, and you just bypass them for no reason at all. So it's like, I don't know what the contingency plan is as the months roll by for 2015, if they plan to just bring the real young kids up in the second half and just let them play, or if it's a much longer term thing going on.
You know, the best teams ever in sports have been a mixture of young, youthful, and the veteran leadership. And bordering more so, with the majority of that being the veteran leadership and more veterans.
I think
with a nice sprinkle and a third of your team in any sport being rookies to 1, 2, 3 year players. And I mean, that's a volatile situation. That's a successful situation to be in, and you'll find yourself winning a lot of games.
I think most of the good teams that you've seen in the last few years are not only good foundationally, but they have a risk that they took that paid off. Like Phil Hughes for the Twins last year, like they didn't take that risk this offseason, and with no real floor. I mean, if you lose 90 games or 100 games, what's the difference? I mean, it's a higher draft pick for all we care. But if you take that risk and you find a guy, a 27, 28-year-old free agent who turns into a chip for you, you either trade him, extend him. You have equity in a guy who becomes part of your next run, whether it's as a trade chip or as an extension. I mean, they extended Phil Hughes and did exactly that, but for some reason didn't do that with younger players in free agency this offseason.
Brandon Warren, Cold Omaha, 105theticket.com, part of our writing team. Is it wrong for me, being just a regular, typical old Minnesota sports fan? I tend to be a little bit more pessimistic probably than the regular guy, but I've been burned so many times by the Vikings, the Timberwolves particularly, the Twins, 90 lost seasons and this and that and back and forth. I was so optimistic going into this regular season until Friday happened. Friday with the news, the shocking news really, of Irvin Santana and the 80-game suspension for PED use. Now I'm down in the dumps again about the Minnesota Twins. Do you think I'm right in saying that? I'm worried about the effect that it's going to have on the team. Ricky Nolasco starting the second game on Wednesday. Five hits. I know they face David Price, and it's just one game, and I know they've lost their last seven opening day games the last 7 years. It just seems to me, maybe it's just because it's rainy days and Mondays always get me down, but I don't know, man. I'm worried.
I was in the same spot. That's quite a Friday news dump for the Twins, and definitely, you know, discouraging. The thing is it's not so much that Irvin Santana alone represented some five-game improvement for the Twins so much as the trickle-down effect. Who takes his spot in the rotation? Pelfrey. Who takes Pelfrey's spot in the bullpen? Thompson. Thompson, you know.
Who?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Why not Caleb Thielbar?
I don't understand.
I mean, who's Aaron Thompson?
I have no idea. I mean, Aaron Thompson, lefty, doesn't throw particularly hard, didn't have that great of a season at Rochester last year, and for some reason bypassed Thielbar. I don't know if he was the most mobile piece, you know, when you slot how things are going to go in Rochester and you have guys set up to do certain roles. Maybe Thompson was the most mobile piece they could drop out of there. But at the same time, moving a guy to a big leagues isn't about mobility. It's about a guy getting a guaranteed paycheck, and anybody, you know, should be willing to move. And so when you get the pieces moving in certain directions, like Thielbar would have been just the defensible, obvious choice, but so would Trevor May have been for the rotation. So, again, it's the repeating of this process that I kind of laid out in the piece was low-ceiling veterans, one after the other on this march, you know, to the Twins roster. I just don't get it.
I don't either. I really don't. I mean, you have what you have. You can see what you get here. And the veterans on this team have run their course, and that's what you're going to get, a whole bunch of mediocrity with the possibility, I guess, of Maurer coming back and making some big splash and Torrey Hunter helping him do that, too. I don't know. A lot more to worry about this week than there was last week. But thank you for your time, and we'll have you back sometime soon. Write a really good article, and I guarantee you'll be back.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Don't write a bad article.
Don't put up a stinker.
I mean, okay. Do something really interesting and you'll be back.
Make a splash.
That'll be the first time, though.
Use big words.
Have to break the mold to do that.
Yeah.
Brandon Warren, Cold Omaha, 105theticket.com. Thank
you. Good job. Nice job. Next up, Brandon Lang. You know him. You love him like we do. He's the best in the business. Gambles, sets the odds, knows everything. Picked Wisconsin over Kentucky. He did say that, and he was right. So we're going to talk to him about how that game went and the game coming up tonight, Duke versus Wisconsin, with Brandon Lang next.
Superstar Mike Morris and Ben Holson. You're listening to 105 The Ticket.
Hey, everybody, this is Charles Barkley, and the moment of truth is finally upon us. 500 teams have now been whittled down to the only two that incredibly wealthy, degenerate gamblers like myself really care about. Is the Marmaduke Blue Devils, and first of all, everybody knows that the devil is red, so they don't have any credibility going in, and they putting it all on the line against those Wisconsin cheese-headed badges. And let me tell you one thing, I do need some stinking badges, because I'm going to be putting $100,000 down on those kids, and I sure as hell can't afford to have these pretty legs broke right now.
That, the voice of Charles Barkley.
I wonder if you could talk about Kaminsky and what makes him so difficult to and what, if anything, is unique about defending him, things he does.
Oops.
Well, he promised he would come back on after the game and denounce his brilliance, and I'll give him that. Brandon Lang joins us again. He picked it right. Wisconsin over Kentucky.
I think Wisconsin's going to win tonight. I don't want them to win.
Yeah.
I'm afraid they're going to. I'm so pessimistic today. I don't know what it was, what it is. It's so dark and gray outside.
Well,
it's raining, but I'm so worried because I've just been beaten in the head so many times about Wisconsin fans and their damn Packers and their damn Badgers.
Well, now Kaminsky. And we can deal with him now.
And Decker.
The Naismith Player of the Year.
Bo Ryan.
He will take to the court against Devil. One of the guys that we'd like to have, if we had a shot at taking Devil or Cat, I suppose, we'd be happy with that in with the Timberwolves, that is.
Joined now by our guy, renowned sports gambling and handicapping expert whose life story immortalized in the film Two for the Money, starring Matthew McConaughey as Brandon Lang himself. Brandon, heck of a call on, I think we talked to you, what was it, Thursday or Friday, where you said Kentucky's going to lose to Wisconsin. They ended up doing that. My bracket is screwed because of you. Normally, I win tons of money. It had nothing to do with you, but because Kentucky lost, I'm losing tons of money.
Well, I'm only a renowned handicapper when I win.
It's kind of how it works.
When I lose, I'm a worthless piece of you-know-what in the game. So.
No, it happens.
You called it, though. I mean, Notre Dame and that same format that Notre Dame almost beat them by or with. It seemed like Wisconsin did follow that.
Well, there's so many things to talk about, the game within a game. I'm going to send you guys a copy of my book so you can read it. But on the back cover of the book, Dan Gilroy talks about this is one of the loneliest professions in the world because when you win, you're supposed to. When you lose, you're the worst. But right now, we're on a pretty good high. I said Duke would handle Michigan State as well. And to go 2-0, and I think this week for my clients, I'm a perfect 6-0 going into tonight. So it's just been a dream week, a good week to do that and to have a great feel for how Wisconsin matched up with Kentucky and how Duke matched up with Michigan State. I think that leads into tonight and how these teams match up against one another in the game within a game. But give Wisconsin credit because with the flagrant one not being called down to 60-56 and needing stops and to get three straight shot clock violations and then, you know, the two biggest shots in that game were made by Decker. It was the layup from the left baseline to cut it to 60-58 and then the three to put him up 63-60. In the first meeting against Duke, Decker had 5 points. He only took 5 shots. And here's a guy that's averaging 20 a game right now in this tournament. Give Duke credit for going in there and beating them by 10, but let's be honest. He shot 60% from the floor in the first half, and they led by 3. They shot 70% in the second half, missed 16 shots for the entire game. Now, both these teams are completely different. Duke has grown. Duke's gotten better. But Wisconsin, with Varian Jackson getting injured in the Rutgers game, Bronson Koenig becoming the point guard. They've gone 21-1 with this kid at the point. The only game they lost was at Maryland in a game that was tied at 52 with a minute to go, and Maryland had 2 great possessions and won the game 58-53. So you can look at it from many different angles. But in my mind, the difference in this game and the difference in Wisconsin right now is people are jumping all over this Duke bandwagon and anointing them as a second coming. But, guys, let me be honest with you. Their run to the Final Four, like I said with Michigan State and Tom Izzo and the staff of Moses, so is Coach K with Robert Morris limited offensively, San Diego State limited offensively, Utah limited offensively, Gonzaga, the most overrated team in the tournament, and Michigan State, who's got 2 scores and limited offensively. Now let's see how they do against an improved Wisconsin team that showed the world. Not only did we beat Kentucky, but we had to go dig deep down at 60-56 and get stops, and we got it, and there was no panic whatsoever.
Brandon, it's worrying me that you're saying we. Are you from Wisconsin?
No, I'm from Michigan, but it's pretty close.
Oh, okay.
Because same ass.
Talking to Brandon Lang, renowned sports gambling and handicapping expert. That's why we talked to him. BrandonLang.com, by the way. It's like I'm battered. I'm a battered Minnesota sports fan, and it's because of Wisconsin. Wisconsin, well, it doesn't matter what team it is, whether it be the Badgers or the Packers. Their other teams don't really win very much, but when the Badgers beat Kentucky, the first thing they said, 38-1. It wasn't, oh my God, we're so excited. We work together as a team. It's been a long road. We're very, you know, keep our head down. We've got one more game to go. It's 38-1. And the reason I have a problem with Wisconsin is because they're jumping over our borders for our jobs and for all these things like it's the Mexican border. Why, if it's so great in Wisconsin, why don't you just stay there? And that's why I'm worried just by everything you just said. Just now about the Wisconsin Badgers tonight, I'm going to have to deal with all the Wisconsin fans that we work with, that everybody works with in the Twin Cities because we're right there on the border, that every time we want to go get a drink of water at the water cooler, we're going to have to hear about them rubbing our faces in the fact that another Wisconsin team won another championship and then show us their closed fists and say, what's this? Oh, that's a Minnesota Viking championship ring. Or, oh, that's the last time that the Minnesota Gophers won the NCAA championship. It drives me insane.
I feel your pain. I really do. But you have to understand that I say we only because over the last year on my website, I've had a streak of my biggest release, which is a 150 dime release. And over the course of the year, I hit 9 straight. and Saturday Wisconsin plus the five was number 10 in a row over the course of the year. So when I hit a big play and a team hits that big play for me, it no longer becomes they, it becomes we. And somewhere along the lines, this year in football, the Minnesota Vikings are going to be a big play. Or next year in college basketball, the Minnesota Gophers are going to be a big play. And they're going to be my we. Right now, Wisconsin's my we. That's not saying that somewhere along the line, and we're going to stay in touch the entire year. I love doing your show. You guys have all of a sudden moved up as one of my favorites. I will go Purple Rain out there in Eden Prairie.
Yes.
And I'll go deep, and I'll even sing some Purple Rain. And wear the high purple boots like Prince did. I'll get a wig and try to look as sexy as I can. But
I honestly God think we need to build a fence along the border because they are jumping over and taking our jobs. They're taking our women. They're taking our children. They're taking our beer. They're taking our steaks. They're taking, I mean,
all of it.
They take our joy.
I don't have
happiness.
Well, let me just say this. I've spent time in Wisconsin and I've spent time in Minneapolis, and I can assure you the women I saw at the Mall of America, there is no way Green Bay stealing your women, because there were a few women there. If looking good were a crime, they'd be on death row. So your women are fine.
Who do you think wins the matchup tonight between the two big men?
Believe it or not, I think they're going to cancel each other out, rightly so.
Yeah.
I honestly feel the difference in the game and the X factor is going to be Decker. And I really truly feel that Duke did not have to account for him in the first meeting. Because Jackson never got him the ball. Jackson scored 25, and I think jacked up 16 shots. So Caney gets him the ball. They isolate Decker now. He's the second option on offense behind Kaminsky. So I think Decker is the X factor. And in this tournament, their road, they've had to work. They've had to go through North Carolina. They've had to go through Arizona. They've had to go through Kentucky. This team is battle-tested, whereas I'm not so sure if Duke has to go through this same path. I'm not so sure they're in the Final Four. They had such an easy go of it. And let's not forget, if I said on your show last Friday that Wisconsin is a better version of Notre Dame, I think the analogy I use that if Notre Dame's Sizzler, then Wisconsin's Ruth Chris Morton's or Smith & Wesson.
Yeah.
So,
yes.
If that's my analogy that I stuck with on Saturday, well, Duke's got four losses this year, and Notre Dame beat them two out of the three. And so that shows you right there that against a team like Notre Dame, which is Wisconsin, Duke just caught Wisconsin at the right time early in the year, and they let him have it. Duke's going to be very surprised that this is a whole different Wisconsin team with Koenig at the point than they saw in December.
Talking to Brandon Lang, renowned sports gambling and handicapping expert whose life immortalized in the film Two for the Money, starring Matthew McConaughey as Lang. We've got 1 minute left, Brandon. So tell us who wins tonight. I think I can get even saying, and who I think that you have going for tonight in the national championship game, and then wrap it up with telling us why our listeners should go to BrandonLang.com.
Wisconsin wins it because I said on Friday it's deja vu. UNLV went to Indianapolis undefeated, got beat by Duke. Duke got back up emotionally and beat Kansas in the final. Gave Mike Krzyzewski national championship. Here is, of course, Wisconsin. They beat undefeated Kentucky. They will go on to win tonight, give Bo Ryan his first national championship. They're just the more experienced team, the better team, and it's destiny. And at BrandonLang.com, if you want to know who my other nine handicappers have, if you haven't taken advantage of the full free access pass, the one-day pass, absolutely free. All 10 best bets, $1,000 value. Absolutely free. My way of saying thanks for listening to me tonight. Hope I made you laugh. And if you want to go farm for some women at the Mall of America, I'll come there this summer and we'll do it.
Perfect.
And he's going to sing Purple Rain at the same time. So, Brandon Lang, thank you so much, sir. I appreciate your time and your knowledge. And we'll be tuning in, and I'll be watching exactly what you were talking about just now.
Let's pull it in, guys. Let's pull it in.
Take care, my man. Have a good night. Enjoy the game.
Very interesting guy. I wonder if Wisconsin's batter torn from all the big games. They played a lot of big games. I wonder if they're worn out from getting through that.
It sure did look like it on Saturday.
Well, I know, but I mean, what does that take out of a team?
The emotional highs, though, man.
I would think so, but you know, Duke has been just kind of waltzing along here, not really challenged.
There's no depth in Duke, though.
Yeah.
There's no depth.
I don't think there will be nearly the defense that is required to win one of these.
The over-under is 140, I believe.
Really? Oh, well, I'm 143. That was what I had. If they were playing Kentucky, I don't know what's going to happen. We'll watch the game tonight. Next up, opening day Monday. Wow. What the differences are between a baseball and football by George Carlin. One of my favorite bits of all time. We'll do that next.
Passionate Sports Talk. 105 The Ticket.
little jet.
No.
Yeah.
No, Buck Cherry.
Oh. What was the, okay. Forget it.
Ready?
We're ready to go. This is one of my favorite bits. We're going to set this up. I'll just let you know that it's George Carlin. Does it need anything else? It wouldn't matter what he was saying. It's just that funny. But this is the differences between baseball and football. And what a perfect time to do it. Baseball season beginning so well for us and plays right into this thing. Let's play it.
I'd like to talk a little bit about baseball and football. Starting with baseball, baseball is different from any other sport in a lot of different little ways. For instance, in most sports, you score points or you score goals. In baseball, you score runs. In most sports, the ball or the object is put in play by the offensive team. In baseball, the defense puts the ball in play, and only the defensive team is allowed to touch the ball. In fact, in baseball, if an offensive player touches the ball intentionally, he's out. Also, most sports, the team is run by a coach. In baseball, the team is run by a manager. And only in baseball does the manager or the coach have to wear the same uniform the players do. Can you picture Bill Parcells in his New York Giants uniform? Now, baseball and football are different from one another in other kind of interesting ways, I think. First of all, baseball is a 19th century pastoral game. Football is a 20th century technological struggle. Baseball is played on a diamond in a park, the baseball park. Football is played on a gridiron in a stadium, sometimes called Soldier Field or War Memorial Stadium. Baseball begins in the spring, the season of new life. Football begins in the fall when everything is dying. In football, you wear a helmet.
In baseball, you wear a cap.
Football is concerned with downs. What down is it?
Baseball is concerned with ups. Who's up? Are you up? I'm not up. He's up.
In football, the specialist comes in to kick.
In baseball, the specialist comes in to relieve someone.
In football, you receive a penalty.
In baseball, you make an error. Whoops!
Football has hitting, clipping, spearing, blocking, piling on, late hitting, unnecessary roughness, and personal fouls.
Baseball has the sacrifice.
Football is played in any kind of weather. Rain, sleet, snow, hail, mud. Can't read the numbers on the field. Can't read the yard markers. Can't read the players' numbers. The struggle will continue.
In baseball, if it rains, we don't come out to play. I can't come out to play. It's raining out.
Baseball has a seventh inning stretch. Football has the two-minute warning.
Baseball has no time limit. We don't know when it's going to end. We might have extra innings.
Football is rigidly timed, and it will end even if we have to go to sudden death.
In baseball, during the game in the stands, there's kind of a picnic feeling. Emotions may run high or low, but there's not that much unpleasantness.
In football, in the stands during the game, you can be sure that at least 27 times you are perfectly capable of taking the life of a fellow human being. Preferably a stranger. And finally, the objectives of the two games are totally different. In football, the object is for the quarterback, otherwise known as the field general, to be on target with his aerial assault, riddling the defense by hitting his receivers with deadly accuracy, in spite of the blitz, even if he has to use the shotgun. With short bullet passes and long bombs, he marches his troops into enemy territory, balancing this aerial assault with a sustained ground attack which punches holes in the forward wall of the enemy's defensive line. In baseball, the object is to go home and to be safe. I hope I'll be safe at home. Safe at home.
Feel that? Radioactive Sports. 105 The Ticket.
Welcome back, Radioactive Sports.
Oh, boy. Remember this guy?
Oh, yeah.
Remember this guy? Hold on.
We're not going to talk with him. No, we're going to talk with him. We can talk to him about anything almost because I think he knows everything. I think he knows absolutely everything. Warren from St. Paul, welcome back to the show.
Been a long
I hope
time,
that you like the introduction music, a little Alien Ant Farm, and
Criminal there.
What are you thinking about these days?
I was in Tampa all winter, and all I heard about were quarterbacks in the draft. Oh. And go back a couple days ago, I heard you guys talking about. I think that our general manager deserves no higher than a C grade for things that he's done.
Yeah,
of course he's made numerous mistakes and he's done some good things, but on that count I'd give him a C. okay. And then where the Vikes are at, where they're picking, I think it's going to be kind of a I don't know, it's a possibility they might go down, but I think there's going to be a couple of players that or areas that you may not think they'll draft. Highly most likely would be wide receiver, defensive end. Because the sheriff will probably be gone by the time that they draft, from what I hear from other places around the country. The guy that they really like and had the best guard, I believe, and I don't know if you've heard of this guy. It's from another small school, like our starting guard is. You ever heard of Ollie Marpet from Hobart University?
Yeah, he's going to be a late-round draft, one of those late-round draft picks, I think, that could be quite interesting for the Vikings.
That's not going to happen. He's going to be...
Think so?
There's a lot of talk that he's going to be... A lot of people think he's the best guard in the draft.
Oh, come on.
To tell you the truth.
Well,
and there's a belief, and they talked about it in Tampa and other places, that he'll be a second or third-round choice. I think that the Vikings will try to get him. And I don't believe another offensive lineman for the Vikings will be feasible. But another thing that you may look at that they may draft is another wide receiver, because where they're drafting from, that's one of the best. I think Mari Cooper or White out of West Virginia is a very highly likely choice for them.
If either of them are there,
yeah. And the only linebacker that they could possibly draft in the first round, where they're drafting, would be McKinney out of
Mississippi State.
Mississippi. Yeah. He's the only guy that would be feasible in the first round.
No. He'll likely be a second or third round. No, second or third round draft pick probably.
No. There's a belief that he will be the top rated linebacker.
Our guy from what's it called? NFL Draft Scout and CBS Sports says he's a fourth round linebacker. I've liked him too, Victor. I really do.
Well, and the other highly likely choice that they would draft where they're at is Ray from Missouri.
Oh.
Because most of the other players that they're looking at that they need, I still think receiver is probably the most likely choice. Also, the defensive back out of Michigan is the only other defensive back.
In you
the
talk
draft.
A lot. Warren.
Trey Waynes. How about now, where do you think who do you think and what do you think the Vikings are really going to draft by need and or by, you know, best player available at number 11? What do you think? What do you think of that?
I believe the most highly likely guy they would pick would be Cooper or Ray or this McKinley guy, because I think that he's the highest rated inside
you
linebacker.
You really think that McKinley, he's not going to go that high from Mississippi State?
No, he's not. Second round tops, maybe third round. Since when did you start saying I believe? Normally you say normally you say it differently.
Well, you guys were saying Kendricks would be a choice for them.
Second round. Yeah, I like him a lot, yes.
So like second or third.
He won't be drafted those second rounds. So I'll tell you what, that doesn't leave very many options at 11. Because if you take the defensive back out of Michigan State,
okay.
You take Ray or one of the receivers, there's nobody else in that camp. This is a really different type of draft because, you know, there's a possibility they could wind up, one of the quarterbacks could slip down. But I believe in this draft that where they're picking the receivers or the defensive back out of Michigan.
Okay.
With Ray.
Okay.
Being the top four possibilities.
So you're saying that you're pretty sure the defensive back from Michigan State, by Trey Waynes, is what you believe they should do, but you don't think so because you think that one of the quarterbacks could slide down.
If Mariota, or especially Mariota, if he slides down to 11, that's a dream situation for the Minnesota Vikings because they'll trade back. That's what they want to do.
Of course.
Benardrick McKinney, I got lambasted for saying that the Vikings should take him in the end of the first round, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Dane Brugler goes, come on, he's a fourth round draft pick at best.
Yeah, and the small school offensive lineman, no way. No way. Yeah, I mean, he's a second day guy no matter what.
Yeah.
He'll be drafted in the third round.
How do you know all of this stuff, Warren?
Because there's somebody that's in the Tampa area.
Is it the Illuminati?
No, there's a guy in the Tampa area that still deals with teams in the draft, and he's in these meetings. He knows where these guys stack up, and he's very accurate. He's 80% accurate on most of his knowledge on first day picks. I say Ray, the defensive lineman out of Missouri,
mm-hmm.
or one of the wide receivers. Likely be a Viking draft choice. I don't think that they're going to get to the defensive back out of Michigan State. I think he'll be drafted before the Vikes get to him. So I think those are the most likely choices that they'll get.
You think a defensive lineman out of Missouri, guy that they think he
Shane
is
Ray,
literally
I,
just
I don't think he's going to be available.
He's not going to be around. Oh, he'll be available, like in the third round.
Shane Ray.
Yes.
No, he will be drafted in the
He'll be middle round. Middle of second 15. Round.
Shane Ray.
Middle second round.
He'll be drafted in the top 15.
No.
Yeah.
And then you got either Cooper or White, most likely.
You think the Vikings would actually take a receiver then?
Well, I think they would, even though they just got a big. Think about it. If you were drafting in that position. What other position would be feasible at that point?
I think the cornerback. I think that Trey Waynes will be available, possibly.
Yeah.
Unlikely at this point because his stock is rising. He'd probably go 7, 8, 9.
I don't know that the Chicago Bears would take him. I think that they would probably take a wide receiver or maybe even Mariota if he's there.
Yeah.
Shane Ray, defensive end, Missouri, not Michigan, by the way. Most mock drafts have him going number 8 to Atlanta, somewhere around there. Trey Waynes now being a hot pick either between Atlanta or the New York Giants, which is terrifying to me. Brandon Scherff, latest mock draft from Dane Brugler going to St. Louis. So that leaves us with Devontae Parker, Todd Gurley, Randy Gregory, Melvin Gordon.
Yeah.
Nobody we really, although Shaq Thompson. I don't see Shaq Thompson a lot, but I think the Vikings like Shaq Thompson a lot.
Was it Collins, the big offensive lineman from LSU?
Lael Collins, yeah.
So I don't know. Thank you for your
Thanks,
input,
Warren.
Though, Warren.
How many times did you count that time?
You missed a bunch when you turned over there to your other screen.
Well, I got a little distracted.
I know that I counted 8, and then there must have been like 5 that you missed.
But he changes because we count when he says, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because he says it all the time.
Yeah,
but now I think he's catching on, and now he says, I believe.
He is. No question. Somebody told him.
I think we should say, when he says, I think, or I believe, we should count it.
Oh, it'll be unbelievable. If we go with those two words, it'll be a couple dozen anyway, but...
I love him.
He just said a whole bunch of nothing.
Honest to God, you could let him talk for 15 minutes.
He didn't say anything.
Yeah, it's my favorite part.
I think maybe a quarterback can fall...
Uh-huh.
And the cornerbacks are probably not going to be there, but those receivers probably a couple. Let me just name.
And Warren, I love that he calls and stuff like that. But there's this guy in Tampa.
There's a guy in Tampa that's still involved in the draft.
He's in all the meetings.
He's in the meetings
all
with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
No,
apparently,
all the meetings.
Yeah.
Not just the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He's everywhere. In every single meeting.
Apparently so.
Warren, he's such a great guy.
Lucky.
Yeah. Gotta go.
Yeah.
Look at the time.
I'd say we're going to have to go. Let's go. Come on back and let's do some sillier sides of sports.
I have the top 11 baseball ballpark foods that you need to try. We need to take a. The radio show on a tour to all these ballparks and try all these foods.
I would love to.
I'll tell you about all of them coming up.
We're going to come back and say all the different foods, all the great ones, maybe not so great if you don't agree with it. And a true superstar next.
You're listening to 105 The Ticket. Back to superstar Mike Morris and Ben Holson.
Today's radio show is sponsored by food. Food. If you're going to eat, why not try food?
Yum, yum, yum. Yum, 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 yum. Yum, 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 yum.
So thankful for our newest sponsor. I've never thought about that. I mean, I've been so hungry for days sometimes and just gone, what could I possibly eat? What a great idea. Food. Seriously, go eat it. It's good stuff.
Have a bite. Just go grab some food.
Have a little nibble. Sillier side of sports. It's how we like to wrap things up here on Radioactive Sports with the superstar Mike Morris and me, Ben Holson. The 2015 baseball season officially underway. There were games last night. One today I wish I hadn't watched. The Twins losing 4-0. And really, though, what's baseball without the most ridiculous food combinations meant to clog your arteries and possibly carry you to a quick demise? Well, you may die from some of the ballpark food options. At least, you know, you've died enjoying savory combinations of tons of carbs loaded with plenty of fat.
Yeah,
you happen to be in Florida.
Gravy, preferably.
Yeah, gravy. Oh, I've got a heck of a... I've got some doozies for you. If you happen to be in Tampa Bay, the Tampa Bay Rays, a 4-pound burger with 2 8-ounce patties and 8 slices of cheese. Oh, don't forget the 32 slices of bacon. It's called Fan versus Food, and if there were some chance of Fan ever winning this battle, I doubt it. 32 slices of bacon, 8-ounce patties, 2 of them, 8 slices of cheese. Looks amazing.
Four pounds.
You could, yeah. I think
I put down a 4-pound burger at Joe Spencer's in 20 minutes.
Doesn't surprise me.
Seriously.
You're a man beast.
It was called the Beast.
Is it?
It had 3 pounds of French fries, though.
Oh, my God.
That I could not get down in the 30-minute limit.
I'd like to take you, I don't want to do it anymore because I did it one time, but at Shamrock's, my favorite bar.
Yeah.
Down on West 7th Street.
I've been down there.
Have you ever done their burger challenge?
No.
Try it. I beat seven other friends of mine. They all puked. I did it in 23 minutes, and I did not puke. There's another guy who grew up in a farm, a big farm guy.
Yeah.
He finished it in 36 minutes or something, something like that.
Now, is there a time limit?
No. But all 7 of them puked. I was the 8th. I finished 23 minutes, did not puke.
He puked. And so describe the burger.
They're like their versions of Big Macs, but just massive amounts of cheese. You have to eat 2 of them and fries. 2 burgers, 2 baskets, fry, and all that stuff.
Well, it's the cheese that'll get you.
Oh, the cheese.
Oh, it'll get you.
I'm not a big ketchup and mustard guy, and I was putting ketchup and mustard on every single bite just so I could have some sort of different taste in my mouth to make it happen.
The Beast at Joe Spencer's, by the way, only one guy has eaten it and kept it down.
You?
No, I didn't do it in the right time. I should have said in the right time. It was a guy who was home on leave from Afghanistan. It was a little soldier, actually. Ate 7 pounds, kept it down long enough to get outside and throw up. I, on the other hand, it took me 45 minutes instead of the 30 to get it down, and then I ordered dessert. That's the difference.
It's funny because Shamrock's, they said, because you finished it so quickly, if you're hungry tomorrow and you come back and you want another burger, we'll give it to you in the house.
Jeez.
And they did.
Nicely done.
We're talking about baseball food and ballpark food. We just talked about the Tampa Bay Rays. How about this? Baltimore Orioles. It's called the walk-off. It's a sausage wrapped in a pretzel roll covered in crab dip.
Oh, my God.
Yes, please.
I'll have one.
Sausage wrapped in a pretzel roll covered in crab dip.
Hey, just put one of those on for me. Whatever it takes, fry one up. The crab dip. Oh, man. Yeah. Sounds great. What else do you have? That's in Baltimore.
Yep. Kansas City Royals, just down 35. You could get a pulled pork mac and jack sausage.
See, that's what they do down there.
Pepper jack sausage topped with pulled pork, spiral mac and cheese, and bacon crumbles all on a bun.
Mac and cheese on a bun with pulled pork. That's an A+.
Minnesota Twins, we talked about this last week. The college days, Bloody Mary, a Bloody Mary with a slice of cold pepperoni pizza.
Thing?
Yeah. You can get it at Herbeck's Bar. Beer back, celery, cheese, cheese cubes, cheddar and pepper jack cheese.
You get the whole thing with him.
$19.
$19. What are the other prices on these, by the way?
The one in Kansas City, all right. Houston Astros. This is the one that I'm most excited about.
This is going to be hot, isn't
Chicken
it?
Chicken and waffle cone.
Okay.
Chicken and mashed potatoes inside a waffle cone.
Oh.
Topped with honey mustard.
Son of a bitch.
Looks amazing.
I'm going to eat. I'm driving to Houston now.
Pictures.
Are they playing tomorrow?
The pictures look amazing.
Let's hope so.
Texas Rangers, totally rawsome is what theirs is called. It's a 1-pound, 24-inch hot dog topped with smoked brisket.
Oh,
fresh pico,
no.
Sour cream, and crunchy nacho cheese Doritos.
That's the perfect meal. It's better than anything I ate for Easter.
Wait, 24-inch hot dog?
Shut up. I shouldn't have said that.
With pico. Just,
oh, my God.
Brisket, yeah.
Brisket on that bad boy.
Atlanta Braves, the Dixie Dog. It's a foot-long all-beef hot dog, flash-fried, topped with a mustard-based barbecue sauce, pulled pork, coleslaw, and pickles. That's the one. That's the one that I'd be interested in.
Look out! Those are all good. Read the one from Texas again, the Rangers. Just the raw whatever.
Totally rawsome. A 1-pound, 24-inch hot dog.
1 pound! Hot dog! Son of a bitch!
Topped with smoked brisket, fresh pico, sour cream, and crunchy nacho cheese Doritos.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. Keep going. Or do we have time?
Yeah, we have plenty of time.
Gee.
Four more to go. Pittsburgh Pirates. They have a burger with cheddar cheese, fried egg, and bacon with a sprinkled glazed donut for a bun.
Keep it.
No, that's awesome.
No, you don't want it.
Again, they've had
a glazed donut.
No, again, they've had that down at Shamrock's before Burger of the Month. Unbelievable. It almost tastes like sausage and pancakes.
Okay. Well, okay.
And you like pancakes.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, and you love sausage.
Oh, yeah.
If anybody loves sausage.
I bought a pound of ground chuck this morning.
Okay.
I was out on the town, stopped out, bought a few things that I need to eat all the time, Got like 16-ounce containers full of hamburger, so I could do them one at a time, because I eat 16 ounces no matter what. Sure. I always just put on 1 pound of hamburger and just put it in the skillet, light her up, eat the whole thing without a bun.
Okay.
Just Worcestershire sauce. That's it.
Worcestershire?
Worcestershire.
You're a nutbag.
I'm nuts. I'm cracked. Go ahead.
That sucks ass, by the way.
Yeah, it sucks ass, but it's good.
Cincinnati Reds, meat lover's hot dog. It's a 1/4-pound hot dog, deep fried.
Quarter pound? Jeez.
Deep fried.
Ooh.
Topped with chili, pepper jack cheese, and fried salami. Let me read that again. I screwed that up.
My one.
Meat lover's hot dog. 1/4-pound deep fried hot dog topped with chili, pepper jack cheese, and fried salami.
That's awesome, dude. I mean, the only thing they could do to make that better in Cincinnati is pour some doggone Skyline chili over that thing.
Yeah.
God.
You know, I rip on Wisconsin quite often, but I mean, I love everything about Wisconsin except their sports teams.
Yeah,
I really do like hanging out with Wisconsin people.
I don't like any of them.
They can drink like crazy.
Yeah, they can put it down.
They know how to drink. They know how to party. They're fantastic people.
Yeah.
And they know how to eat specifically. The Milwaukee Brewers, Miller Park, pulled pork parfait.
What?
Pulled pork, mashed potatoes layered parfait style. Topped with chives, because fruit and yogurt is for pansies.
Hell. Well, they're right on that. See, that's the one thing that they've said that I can't hate them for.
And then finally, the number one.
These were ranked?
Yeah.
These were ranked.
Yeah.
Oh.
Number one on the list, the Colorado Rockies. At the Colorado Rockies, Coors Field, you can literally go and buy Rocky Mountain oysters.
Okay.
Deep fried bull and bison testicles. Would you eat them?
That's number one.
It's number one.
Bull balls. Bison balls.
Yes.
No hog nuts. No.
Why wouldn't you eat them?
You know what? I'm not going to have it.
Why?
I don't know. I don't want hog nuts. I don't want bull nuts.
Why not?
I don't want buffalo balls.
What?
I don't want them.
Why not?
You?
No.
Why are you asking me with such an astonished voice, like a surprised voice?
Because you will eat anything.
I damn near would. I'll take them. Yeah, I'll eat them. I don't care. I'll eat them. Get me a big...
You would eat them. I'd love to see you eat them.
Get me a big old set of bull balls.
Opening day baseball. Twins lose 4-0. The Wild, FSN. Watch it on the TV tonight. They play the Winnipeg Jets. They could clinch a wild card spot. Come back tomorrow, would
you
please?
Let's just hope it's all okay. I've got a runny nose. I got to get out of here pretty quick. But I wouldn't dare leave without giving you people the best part of the show, and that's the true superstar, Marine Corporal Kyle R. Schneider, 23 years of age, from Phoenix, New York. Assigned to the 2nd Battalion, 8th Marines, 2nd Marine Division, 2nd Marine Expeditionary Force out of Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. He died June 30 in Helmand Province, Afghanistan, while conducting combat operations. That was in 2011. You got to go back and get more. You never leave them behind. I haven't read all of them, so I went back to 2011 for this one. My true superstar is Marine Corporal Kyle R. Schneider. And remember him in your hearts and prayers, please, if you would.
In the cold, cold ground.